This is a special edition on 102.3 KRMG, Tulsa's news and talk. The KRMG Morning News 8 a.m. in-depth hour starts now.
Welcome to our KRMG Morning News 8 a.m. in-depth hour on the upcoming presidential election. 1 week from the Oklahoma voter registration deadline and a month and a day from Election Day. Now, our purpose over the course of this hour is to answer as many questions as possible about the process during this highly unusual election year. It's a process that faces tough challenges, from the pandemic to mail-in ballots to allegations of possible tampering, fraud, shortage of poll workers, and there's a lot more. Tulsa County Election Board Secretary Gwen Freeman is here to answer your questions. You can submit them right now via the open mic on the KRMG app. But we begin with the 50,000-foot view of election security across the state.
KRMG goes in-depth.
With KRMG's Russell Mills.
Paul Zerichs has served as state election board secretary since 2009. I got him on the phone yesterday afternoon.
I want to start by giving a shout-out to our county election board officials and workers across the state, because I can tell you in places like Tulsa County, at the Tulsa County Election Board, they are working 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, to make sure that they are able to process the absentee ballot requests, the returned absentee ballots, and voter registrations.
He tells me Oklahomans still like to vote in person. In fact, this June and in August, we had 75 to 80% of the voters actually show up at the precincts. But there is definitely a trend towards absentee voting.
Mail absentee voting in particular, and that was the case in June, it was the case in August, and already for the general election, as of this recording, there are more than 260,000 requests statewide for absentee ballots in the state of Oklahoma, and that is well more than double the previous record of requests, which was set in 2018 for the general election.
It's interesting, though, that even pre-pandemic, more people wanted to vote by mail. In many states, election boards can't even open those mail-in ballots until in-person voting actually begins.
It was the case in Oklahoma until after the 2012 elections, and the legislature came in and tweaked the laws so that if a county election board has a large volume of absentee ballots, if they have the permission of the state election board secretary, they can begin processing those before election day.
And again, that change was made several years ago, so Secretary Zerichs says we're in good shape to get those votes counted in a timely manner. And he adds the U.S. Postal Service has been a great partner in that endeavor.
I know that in some of the elections earlier this year, the County Election Board Secretary Gwen Freeman in Tulsa County told me that her local postal officials actually allowed the County Election Board staff to make multiple special trips on Election Day to make sure that they get all of those that are in the possession of the Postal Service. So that they're working really hard along with our County Election Board staff to make sure that that your absentee ballot gets delivered and gets counted.
And that's important, because in Oklahoma,
it must be received by the county election board by 7 p.m. on election day when the polls close. So if you're mailing it back, it has to be received by 7 p.m. If you're hand delivering it, and this is only allowed for the no excuse standard absentee ballot, you can hand deliver that during regular business hours up until the day before the election, so the Monday before the election.
Now, despite the fact that Americans have been voting by absentee since at least the Civil War, especially in the military, there are questions this year about the security of mail-in ballots. So, in part two of our discussion with Oklahoma State Election Board Secretary Paul Zerichs, we'll discuss those security concerns. Stay tuned. I'm Russell Mills, 102.3 KRMG, Tulsa's News and Talk.
Issues that matter to you. Expanded on the KRMG Morning News 8 a.m. in-depth hour.
Tulsa Elections Secretary Gwen Freeman, who was really gracious to Martha and I yesterday, because Martha had to go down and drop off her Social Security card so she could be a poll worker. And we got the whole tour of the Tulsa County Election Board office, and I think Gwen's there now. Good morning, Gwen.
Good morning, and thanks for having me this morning, Dan. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for giving us a tour yesterday. Martha and I really enjoyed that, and it really gave us a sense of the monumental task you guys have, not just on election night, but all the time leading up to it and then after it as well. It doesn't stop at 7 p.m., certainly. It doesn't even stop at midnight. Give us an update. I guess the best place to start is, how many absentee ballots do you have in so far? I know this answer already, and it's quite a bit more than you usually have at this point, right?
Well, yeah. As a matter of fact, we've received about 4,300 absentee ballots back. We've mailed out 55,547 as of yesterday, and we continue to receive about 1,300 new absentee requests every single day.
55,000, and we're sitting here on October 2nd, a month and a day away from the election day itself. How does that compare to what you got, say, for the entire presidential election cycle in 2016 compared to 55,000 this year?
It's roughly five times the amount. We looked at just a little under 21,000 absentee ballots sent out for the 2016 November election for the presidential. At this point, we're at 55, as I mentioned, and we're looking to probably top 100,000 ballots sent out. So five times the amount of what we've ever seen historically at the election board.
Well, do you have five times the staff to deal with it?
No, we don't. And we don't have five times the mail room and five times the desks and all that. So we've had to make some adjustments here at the election board and had to expand their physical space to add more people. And even if you add, you know, as many people as it takes to put out that kind of those kind of numbers, how are you going to socially separate them and distance them? How are you going to, you know, all those things have to be taken into consideration, I think. What we're probably seeing is a trend that it may slow down a bit, but I think it's forever changed in terms of the way we do business here.
Rick is with me. I don't think I need to introduce you guys at all, do I?
Yeah. Hi, Rick.
It's been, we've worked together for, we're knowing each other for what now, 25 years?
Something along those lines. How are you doing?
I know. I'm good. Unfortunately, my phone's newer than yours. I'm just wondering, being in your position, you're like an attorney or a doctor. Anytime somebody meets an attorney, they have a legal question. They meet a doctor, they've got a pain in their back they want to figure out. They meet you, it's like, yeah, I got this question about voting. So I know people are talking to you about this. So when you talk about the mail-in ballots, are they saying mostly they just want to avoid the crowds? Are they saying it's COVID-related? What do you get the sense it's actually for the reason we're getting so many mail-ins?
Well, I think there's several reasons, but by and large, number one above everything else is COVID. I mean, when this hit in the spring, of course, we had to do away with the April election. We just completely put it off until June. In June, we saw an increase that was actually so large that it beat the 2016 presidential. Obviously, in August, same sort of trend. It beat the 2016 presidential, and now we're going to beat it by at least five times. So everyone is saying, look, you know, we don't want to vote in person. I mean, with the news out today, we know that everybody's vulnerable. Obviously, the president of the United States has tested positive for COVID, which means, and he's probably the most protected person on the planet in terms of safety and health. And it just shows you that, you know, anyone can get it. And I think a lot of people's fears are based on that. Well, maybe not fears, but hesitation. Let's just put it that way. And so they're hesitant to go and vote in person. I don't blame them at all. So I can tell you right now, that's by and large the reason why we have such an increase.
Well, and by the same token, poll workers, many of them are above the age of 65. They're retired. They have helped you out maybe for several years. They're not going to this year. They're afraid too.
There's a lot of poll workers that are not going to be able to participate and haven't been able to participate in the last couple of elections. And for good reason. They are at a high-risk age bracket, and also many of them have pre-existing health conditions that would keep them from the polls. And if you think about it, some of these big polls, they're going to be exposed to hundreds, if not thousands, of voters on election day. And for the sake of their health, they're opting to sit this one out. What's neat, though, guys, is that we've had such an outpouring from the community. A lot of younger folks, healthy folks that don't have those pre-existing conditions have stepped forward. Obviously, we cannot have an election. By law, we have to have those polls open.
Yeah.
So a lot of younger folks have stepped forward and said, let me take the place of these, you know, the folks that are at a high risk. Your wife, Martha, has done that. Dan, and we're very appreciative of her and all the other folks that have stepped forward to work this election.
Now, you still need some, though.
Folks can stay.
And I'm sorry, I'm going to interrupt a lot because I really want to keep this moving along. We have so many facets to get to. But talking to your precinct worker coordinator yesterday, what she said 300 is roughly what she needs still?
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, we're looking at staffing, you know, this election with well over 1,000 workers. So That's actually, I feel pretty good about that number.
Do you? Okay.
Yeah.
And Martha said something yesterday, and you said we tried, and then we never followed up on it. Martha said, why can't you use the National Guard? Which I thought, God, why not? You say you've actually asked, huh?
It's a fantastic idea, and the State Election Board has, during the last two elections, they've approached the National Guard with that very idea. And I think they really, really tried to pull that together in terms of, you know, stationing certain people here and there in different parts of the state. And at that point, they were just too short of manpower to be able to pull it off.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to listen to some of the open mics and get to those questions in just a moment. We have questions about registration, common mistakes people make, what is a provisional ballot, and when might I be asked to fill out a provisional. All of that's coming up as we continue our 8 a.m. in-depth hour. I actually thought maybe Martha and I could both be poll workers. What I didn't know is once you are there at the precinct, you ain't leaving until it's over. You get there at 6:30 in the morning. You're there until you're done.
This election is, it's going to be a historic one. And they need poll workers.
They do need poll workers, but you were just telling us, Gwen Freeman, that you feel pretty good about only needing 300 at this point. You feel like you're going to be able to fill those.
Yeah, I do feel pretty good about that. I mean, when this first hit, Dan, we had polling places that were dropping off and saying, I'm sorry, we're not going to allow anybody in our building, in our facility at this time. We had tons and tons of poll workers who were just, you know, afraid of it being exposed, and I don't blame them. So we lost polling places and polling workers right off the bat. So to be just 300 short at this point is actually good news.
Okay. And I should explain that I would have worked all day, too, except I have to do this radio show in the morning. Then I have to do another radio show election night. So I would have had to come and go, but that's not possible. Why do you keep everybody at the polling place all day long?
You know, it's chain of custody, and it's Oklahoma law. So once you're out there, and I mean, you remember, you go to your polling places, you see three people. What you probably don't know is what their three objectives are in their three separate jobs. There's a Democrat, there's a Republican, and then there's a third party. That's to keep, you know, watch over how things are conducted. And then there's a chain of custody. Once those ballots are in the inspector's hands, because there's an inspector, a clerk, and a judge, once those ballots are there, they're responsible for keeping an eye on those ballots all the way up until they return them to the election board that night. Same goes for all three members.
When you and I were talking yesterday at the office there, you had said that you'd spent quite a bit of time talking to reporters about the president's comments that he wanted his supporters to go and observe the voting at their precincts. What is allowed in regards to that?
Well, the president was referring to poll watchers in Oklahoma. And, you know, and when you make those broad statements like that, when you talk about mail-in voting, or if you talk about the potential for fraud, you make these huge broad statements, you know, then I, as you know, as an official here in Oklahoma, I have to kind of defend Oklahoma and how we do business. One of the things we do is watchers, for instance, is very specific in Oklahoma statutes. They have to be appointed by either the candidate or the party. They have to go through the election board with this, you know, we have to sign off on special permission to be a watcher. Once they're out there, they can only be watchers to watch the machine getting set up or if there's any repairs to be done to the machine and watching the machine being transported or gotten ready to be transported back to the election board. They're not allowed to stay all day. So there is no such thing as a watcher standing there all day.
Yeah, stop right there. So that's the bottom line. You cannot go into a polling place, cast your vote, and then stand back and watch.
That's correct. That's against the law.
Okay. We're doing this show very deliberately on this date because we're 1 week from the registration deadline, and Rick's been looking at, like, mistakes that people make, and I know he's got some questions for you.
Yeah, and then that really is it, Gwen. When you see people doing that early, a couple of things. What are they doing wrong? What is it they specifically need to know? And then the other thing is we've heard a lot so much about mail-in, and we're hearing some differing information about when that ballot actually has to be in election board hands. Can you cover some of that?
Sure. We'll start with the last first. 7 o'clock on election night, the absentee ballots have to be in the building. Now, we make four runs to the post office on that day, one right before the 7 o'clock deadline to make sure that we pick up any remnants of election materials that are at the post office at that point. In some states, and here's why you get confused, in some states they'll let you use the postmark as, you know, and they'll be continuing to receive those absentee ballots for days after, as long as it's postmarked by 7. In Oklahoma, it has to be in the building by 7. Some of the mistakes that people commonly make is when they're returning their absentee ballots, they don't put an ID in there, a copy of their ID, or they don't have it notarized like they should, or they don't sign it. Maybe they'll put in an out-of-state driver's license, which we don't accept under Oklahoma law. And one of the big things I've seen, it's just heartbreaking to me, is if you don't sign that affidavit, we can't accept it. You may go to all the trouble of getting all the stuff straight and your ID's in there and everything else, but it's much like if I execute a will. If we have a beautifully executed will, but there's no signature on the bottom of it to attest to the veracity of it, then it's much the same with an affidavit, an absentee affidavit. So sign it, please do. On our website at elections.ok.gov, you'll find a rather informative video. So if you want to watch that video, it tells you all the steps to go through to make sure that you do everything right, because our number one goal here is to make sure that every vote counts.
And if you do not do everything right and you show up at the polls and there is a discrepancy, you will be sent to the provisional voting table. Explain that process.
Well, provisional voting is really kind of a neat thing. Let's say that I forgot my, you know, I left my driver's license in my other purse, and I show up at the polls and I've forgotten, and I don't have a proper ID. So I tell them, you know, I don't have my ID, and they will offer me the ability to vote provisionally. It takes a little bit longer, but it's, you know, it's well worth the effort when you consider that you're out there trying to cast your vote. Provisional voting lets you vote, and you give an excuse. You say, well, you know, I think I really am registered in this district, and they say I'm not, or I forgot my ID, or for whatever the reason is. Those provisional ballots, many people say, well, you don't count those unless, no, we count them. Those provisional ballots come back to the election board, and they're gone over very carefully. So I've forgotten my ID in my purse, and sure enough, the folks here at the election board look me up. They know I'm registered legitimately, and my provisional vote will indeed count.
And that is actually what Martha's going to be. She's going to be one of those folks helping out at the provisional ballot table.
Very important job. Yeah. And she seems to be up to the task. Well, I really like her.
You know what? I wondered about this. Isn't that where people might get confrontational?
Yeah, sometimes. If they say, you know what, I am too registered in this district, or, I am a registered voter or what have you. So, yeah, Martha may have to call them a few folks whose feathers are ruffled at that point. And, you know, if you've stood in line and you waited on your chance to vote, it's understandable that you're frustrated if you get up there and there's some sort of glitch in the system. So be patient with that's the number one thing. Be patient with everybody. Nerves are on edge right now. I mean, there's a lot of folks that are just upset about the whole thing. This entire year has been kind of nerve-wracking. So, you know, be patient with our workers. A lot of them will be new, and this may be their very first time to work the polls. And you might just say a thank you on the way out the door for volunteering for us.
We got some big time-involved topics to get to, so we're going to save those for the next half hour. But maybe just in the couple of minutes that we have before the bottom of the hour break here, let's talk about early voting dates and locations. Just a couple of days, right?
Yeah, well, it's 3 days of early voting. That's going to be the Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, 29th, 30th, and 31st. It's going to be different this year. What we were trying to do, obviously, my main concern is keeping our workers and voters safe. We had a call from One Oak Field, from the home of the drillers, and they said, you know what, you guys, would you like to use our facility? We were kind of thinking about an alternate facility at the time, so it came at a rather fortuitous time. Obviously, with an open-air facility like One Oak Field, the baseball field, the spread of COVID is lessened. That will be our only single location for early voting. Normally in the past, we've had the election board open along with Hardesty. Yeah. So this time, we're doing it at a single location, centrally located. It's just around the corner from the election board. So for those of you that are used to coming to the election board, it's very close by. And it allows for a great amount of people, large crowds. It allows for an amazing amount of parking. We're going to have over 1,200 parking spaces available for people, 3 solid days of voting, and we think it's the safest and actually kind of a fun alternative for voters this year.
Yeah. One Oak Field has become kind of the the commons, the community commons where everybody gathers during the pandemic right now. We've got everything from baseball
Vivaldi,
to soccer
yeah.
to opera and voting going on. All right. Gwen Freeman is our guest, the Tulsa County Election Board Secretary. We've got another half hour to go in our 8 a.m. in-depth hour. We'll get into the actual process on Election Day. And by that, I mean, how long is it going to take before we see results? And what's involved behind the scenes? You'll be amazed. Gwen was giving me a tour yesterday and showing me how complex this whole process is and what the pandemic has meant in terms of, you heard her say, five times as many absentee ballots potentially that they'll be processing. And the role of social media in getting folks registered. You've seen the Facebook, are you registered to vote? We'll get into that with Gwen as well, how many registrations they think they're getting. By nearly any measure, Oklahoma has one of the most secure voting systems in the country. Still, in a year of pandemic and political turmoil, people have questions. Many have never voted by mail. Others have concerns about fraud or about hacking. We wanted answers about how secure Oklahoma's election system really is.
KRMG goes in depth.
Here's part two of KRMG's Russell Mills chat with the state official in charge of making sure that every vote counts and every ballot is legit.
The elections of 2020 will set all kinds of records for absentee voting. It's a mixture of pandemic and politics that has some people worried about security. I got Oklahoma State Election Board Secretary Paul Zeriks on the phone yesterday afternoon to talk it over.
You know, when you're talking about election security, there are really three things you need to be concerned about. There's physical security, there's cyber security, and there is misinformation and disinformation. So those are three things you have to be concerned about.
When it comes to physical security, for example, Oklahoma has an important tool that makes any kind of widespread voter fraud pretty difficult. It's called a paper ballot.
That's a great point, Russell. The fact that Oklahoma uses paper ballots and that we have a uniform voting system, meaning it's the same across the state, the same types of ballots, the same voting machines, and the fact that each of these, even though it's a statewide voting system, each county's system is siloed and separated from the others. So, you know, getting into one, for example, doesn't impact the other 76.
Perish forbid. Anyway, siloing the systems does help prevent a widespread cyber attack, but that's just the beginning.
Cybersecurity is very important. We already had a very secure system. We have worked, though, with the State Cyber Command and the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and some other federal and state partners to strengthen and enhance the security for our Oklahoma voting system. We have a number of security protocols in place to maintain the physical security of equipment, ballots, those sorts of things. And it's a group effort, but rest assured, we're doing everything that we can to make sure that we're protecting not just the cyber infrastructure, but also the physical infrastructure of our voting system.
And in case you think, hey, I could vote by mail and then vote again on Election Day?
That is the easiest form of fraud to catch. And, you know, I have said to in other interviews, and I'll repeat it now, only a moron would do it because it really is the easiest kind of, you know, election crime to catch. So don't even try it.
Secretary Zeriks wants voters in Oklahoma to feel confident about voting in 2020.
In Oklahoma, with the protections we have in place, we have the absentee affidavit verification that I discussed. We have chain of custody laws that prevent other people from collecting or taking your absentee ballot where it could be tampered with or trashed. We've seen scandals as recently as 2018 in North Carolina, and then I think even this year in a couple of other states related to absentee ballot harvesting. You can't do that in Oklahoma. There are a number of other protections around absentee voting and in-person voting, for that matter, that help protect elections. So you can trust elections. You can trust that our voting system is accurate and secure. And the most important thing is get registered to vote, study the issues and the candidates, and make your voice heard by voting.
Russell Mills, 102.3 KRMG, Tulsa's News and Talk.
At 8:35, live with us is Tulsa County Election Board Secretary Gwen Freeman. You want to do some open mics?
Oh, sure.
All right, here we go.
I am very interested in addressing the topic of voter fraud, which is not as common as the media has led us to believe. It's actually very rare. Please address that.
Is that true?
Yes, it is. And again, we talked earlier about the president making, statements, kind of these broad statements. But what we have to do is consider that Oklahoma, just like Secretary Zarek just talked about and you talked about, is a very, very secure state to vote in. I believe it's probably one of the finest in the country, if not the finest. In terms of voter fraud, I mean, there's a couple of different types of voter fraud. I assume that what she's talking about is absentee voting voter fraud, which has been the big topic of late. And again, Zurich's kind of talked about that with the identification verification. There are a lot of states that don't operate the way that Oklahoma does. But remember this, we've done absentee voting now. What he was calling mail-in, but what many people are calling mail-in voting, isn't quite the same as absentee voting. In Oklahoma, we've been doing absentee mail-in voting for many, many, many years and very successfully. One of the reasons we do it so successfully is because we require identification verification. We have very strict laws that we follow that are set forth not only by the state election board, but by our legislature. So you can feel very good about casting your vote absentee in the state of Oklahoma.
As you look around the rest of the country, are there states where you go, man, that's sloppy?
Well, you know, I don't want to diss another state at all, but yes, I do see these nightmare scenarios playing out in other states. And you, at that point, you know, I'm just super thankful that, folks had the foresight years and years ago and still do in changing election law as we go to make it even more secure, even during COVID. So I'm very thankful that we have a state like we have. It certainly protects us in the election industry, and it protects you as the voter.
I had a poll worker deny me my right to vote because I brought in my photo tribal ID card instead of a driver's license. I thought the tribal cards were accepted as long as they were photo IDs and federally issued.
Okay, before
they are.
All right, answer the ID question first. They are.
Okay, they are. So if you had a tribal photo ID that was not expired as of the election, then you should have been allowed to vote. And if it were expired, you should have been allowed to fill out a provisional ballot as well. So if you still have that caller's name, I can call her back and make sure I know where that particular place was, the polling station where she voted, so I can follow up on that.
Yeah, she'll leave us another open mic with her number, we'll
oh, okay. That would be great. But remember, here's what you do need to remember. Your driver's license works as long as it is not expired before Election Day. Tribal, any federal or state-issued identification, tribal identification, that will work. Your passport will work. And then, of course, the simplest thing you can show is your voter identification card.
I have a question about my wife's absentee ballot. So she sent hers off already. When I hit the polls on November 3rd, will I be able to see her name and indicated that she has already voted? Thank you.
You'll see her name on the registry. So the registry, when you go in and you sign that book that you sign at your polling place, that registry constitutes every registered voter within that precinct. So, yes, you will see people's names in there that have voted absentee. But what our precinct workers do know is when a person has requested an absentee ballot. So let's say that you've requested a ballot and for some reason you forgot to vote it, or you decided I want to go to my polling place instead. When you show up there, that person behind the desk is going to say, I see that you've requested an absentee ballot. At that point, you say, yeah, I did, but I've changed my mind. So what they will have you do is not only sign the registry, but they'll also have you sign an affidavit stating that you will not vote your absentee ballot. Now, if you decide for some reason you want to vote both, it's probably not a good idea. We will know that you've voted both.
Yeah, that's what Paul Zarek was saying. That's probably the easiest form of voter fraud to catch. Only an idiot would do that. Let's see here. How about this one?
Does anybody know if the homeless or the chronic homeless are going to have a right to vote in this year's election?
That is an interesting question because by, definition, homeless means you don't have a home, don't have a mailing address, but you could, I suppose, if you lived in a shelter and used that as your mailing address.
Yeah, we do have some people who request, some of our homeless voters who've requested absentee ballots, and they can use, for instance, John 3:16 mission address and that sort of thing. But one of the safeguards to find, you know, against voter fraud is that when you request an absentee ballot, we mail it to you. You can't come here and pick one up. So one of the safeguards is we mail it to your address that you've requested. That way we know that the person who requested it will receive it. So when you talk about the homeless population, you know, obviously if you're homeless and you want to be able to vote, you need to be able to hook up with one of these the shelters or places where you can put at least a temporary address.
The University of Tulsa is a worldwide leader in cybersecurity. We've reported on that many times. So we decided probably a good idea to ask the experts there about any concerns about fraud or tampering that they might have with this election cycle.
KRMG goes in depth.
This is KRMG Managing Editor Rick Corey.
Tyler Moore is a professor of cybersecurity at TU, and he holds an endowed chair in the same discipline. His first message is,
like any computer system or voting systems, you know, are vulnerable to hacking.
But there is some good news, especially right here at home.
In Oklahoma, we're in a bit better shape than in other states because we have these optical scan ballots that have paper. It's a computer system that reads it and tallies the vote, but the paper ballot is still there. And so that's actually very valuable. If there's a problem that arises later, you can always go back to the paper ballots if you have to do a manual recount.
When looking at the country as a whole, what are the major concerns?
There are three big threats around election security. One is the security of the vote itself. I probably have the most confidence in the overall security of that vote. The second threat is sort of the attempt before the election occurs to sort of influence, you know, our elections and influence how people vote. That, I think, is a very real risk because we've seen it in 2016. We know the countries are trying to do it again. I think it's an open question how much influence these foreign countries can have on our elections. You know, I mean, as a country, we seem to be doing a pretty good job of dividing ourselves without any additional help from other countries to assist in that. The third threat is the one that I'm most concerned about, is this attempt to sow distrust in the process. Our leaders need to be coming out in front saying that they are doing everything they can to ensure that the election will be fair and that they will respect the result and they will respect the processes in place to ensure that we have a fair election. The reality is our democracy is pretty robust, and it's something that we should be proud of as Americans, that we have this democratic process. If we ascribe too much power to foreign agents that they can disrupt our elections, I think we're doing them a favor. We need to have confidence in our institutions to do the right thing, because I think they really do have that capability if we just respect that.
How do you prepare for what you think might be coming?
You're never going to be able to rid a computer system of all vulnerabilities. And so you just have to do the best you can, making the systems as secure as you can, but you also have to prepare for the possibility that an attack will occur and will succeed. And so what you need to have are human and organizational processes in place that can deal with that problem as it arises. So in the case of elections, what that means is we need to have processes where if something strange and the tabulation count comes through, this can initiate, say, a manual recount that can be observed by both sides to make sure that it is done fairly. And these are essentially, you know, non-technical processes that sort of back up our technical systems.
What do you think the chances are somebody will monkey with some systems around the country successfully on election night?
Here's my concern. I think the possibility of someone successfully manipulating the vote tally in such a way that swings the election is actually pretty low. But I do think there is a risk of trying to actually hack into the computer systems of election boards. We know there were some initial penetrations into many states' election systems, but no evidence that there was an actual attempt to manipulate the vote. But something that we have to be attuned to is a possibility and try to combat.
Rick, thanks for that report. Very cool.
102.3 KRMG, Tulsa's news and talk, where we tell you the three big things you need to know every 15 minutes, all day. Now, back to the KRMG Morning News, 8 a.m. in-depth hour.
If you would, at 8:49, allow me a moment to brag on my wife, who will be a Tulsa County poll worker. I ask her why.
Because this election is, it's going to be a historic one, and they need poll workers.
It's kind of a frontline job. Does it worry you at all?
No, I can wear a mask. I'm going to take a few different masks that I'll change out throughout the day. And I'm going to wear gloves, and I also have a face shield. They're making it as safe for us as possible.
It's an all-day commitment, isn't it?
It is.
Mm-hmm. You're going to be there from before when the polls open, which they open at 7, so you got to be there at 6:30?
6:30.
Until you've been told to, you may be there past midnight.
It's possible. I'm sure in some areas that you will, and you it doesn't stop after the last person walks through your line. There's quite a bit to do afterwards.
It's Sunday afternoon. We're sitting out on our porch. Gwen Freeman, the Tulsa County Elections Administrator, has sent you a packet of this is your precinct official training. So I know you've got to get to it. Probably, what, a couple hours?
Yeah, it'll be a couple hours to train, and I can use all of these with me when I go to the precinct.
You've got an array of documents spread out around you.
The problem solver.
The election day reference and problem solver. All right. Study up, and might check in with you from time to time, but if nothing else, we'll talk to you after and see how you feel about it, okay?
Okay.
Welcome to Precinct Official Training 2020, prepared by the Oklahoma State Election Board.
I sat with her for most of, that was about 2.5, maybe 3 hours, Gwen, of training that you used to do in-house there at the Election Board office, but because of the pandemic is now an online course. Not the most exhilarating 3-hour video we've ever watched, certainly, but very informative, and I got a lot out of it. I know she did, too.
Well, you know, and first, just let me say thank you to Martha for stepping up, and anyone like her who's decided that this is extremely important, and it is. Obviously, by law, we have to conduct these elections. We have to have polls open for in-person voters, and so people like Martha who've stepped forward, we're just super, super grateful for. We do need about 300 extra poll workers. That number has dwindled from what we did need. I feel real good about being able to get the polls well-staffed for this upcoming election. If you are interested, obviously, you have to be a registered voter in Tulsa County, but we'd love to have you.
Okay, so really the only deadline is got to get registered, and that's by next week. But if you are already registered, there is still time for you to volunteer. All right, let's get into what election night is going to look like. You've got all of these absentee ballots. It means that you've – generally, those get counted when, and how's it different this year?
No, it's different in every conceivable way. Normally, and like, say, just a medium-sized election or what have you, we can have those absentee ballots counted and processed on election day and ready to announce the numbers by 7 o'clock, which are that's always our first batch of numbers is absentee, by 7 o'clock on election night. At this point, we're having to convene board meetings to process these absentee ballots virtually almost every day in the month of October, and that will take hours and hours and hours each time we convene. What that means is on election night, if we have thousands and thousands of absentee ballots that come in.
And just to be clear, you're going to the post office right up until almost 7 o'clock to get that last batch, right? We already heard
that. Right.
So you're bringing back stuff that there's no way it's been counted. It hasn't even come back from the post office yet.
That's correct. So, I mean, you've heard me on different, every time I get a chance, I scream it from the rooftops. Look, guys, you get your absentee ballots, fill them out, send them in, or bring them in immediately, as soon as possible, because what will happen is if we have thousands and thousands of absentee ballots that arrive at the very, very last second, those ballots by law must be processed, and they must be processed by a convened board. And once if we had that kind of response on election day or election night, then we're going to be here a while, and you're not going to have those results.
Not that night, maybe not that next day, maybe not till – who knows?
What is last minute, though, Gwen? I mean, what's the cutoff? When do you finally have to say, okay, we don't take anything else in? What's the day or time?
It's
okay, so, yeah, and this gets a little bit confusing, but look at it this way, guys. By 7 o'clock, we have to have every absentee ballot that's out there. By 7 o'clock on election night, it has to be in this building in our hands.
Even if it's postmarked and it's somewhere in the system, it did not make that last mail run from the post office – you're not going to get counted.
Right. So that's why you tell, even the United States Postal Service is telling people, look, give us at least a week. So at least a week in advance, make sure you get those in the mail or come in and drop them off. But, you know, in answer to your question, Rick, it doesn't, there is no cutoff time. If it has arrived in this building, it's set by 7 p.m. If it takes us a day, if it takes us a week, if it takes us 15 days, we must, by law, process every single one of them.
The best bet, though, is if it's, say it's November 1st or 2nd, and you look down and you go, I never mailed that. The best idea is take it physically to the county election board office and drop it off, because then you know it will be counted.
Well, you can do that, and you can do. There is a cutoff for that, by the way. You're only allowed to drop them off in person until 5 p.m. the day before the election.
Okay, because y'all are busy doing other stuff on election day. Hey, Gwen, this has been really, really informative. Before I let you go, every time I scroll through a Facebook feed, I get hit up for, have you registered to vote? Of course I have. How much registration do you think was driven by social media?
Probably a lot, but here's the thing, and I don't mean to discount these third party organizations and their efforts to get people registered. I mean, it's a wonderful thing. However, if you need information, if you want to know if you're registered, if you need to check up on registration status or what you need to do, please go through us. I mean, a lot of these organizations are national. They don't know Oklahoma law. For instance, we had one organization, OK Vote, I think it was, that was contacting people and telling them, you're not registered. Well, they were indeed registered. And I don't know what caused that on their end, but, you know, it caused a bit of a panic for folks. So if you do have questions, please call us. We'll answer them. And then secondly, and more importantly, remember, don't give out your personal information to just anybody just because they're claiming to be some voter organization or, you know, voter, you know, just make sure that because you don't know what they're doing with that information. You really don't. We don't know what they're doing with that information. Your best bet is to go through the election board.
Quickly, the election board phone number and web page.
918-596-5780 is the number for the election board. We are inundated with phone calls. So if we don't get to you right away, please be patient with us. There's everything you could possibly need to know about elections on our webpage at www.elections.ok.gov.
Elections.ok.gov, and it's 596-5780. Gwen, you're a pro. Thank you.
No,
appreciate it.
You guys are great. I appreciate so much you giving me the opportunity to talk to the folks out there and yourself.
We're going to be bugging you more. You know that. We'll talk to you soon.
And let Martha go before 9.
Yeah, please send her home before 9. That would be great.
So she could have dinner on the table, right, Dan?
No, I'll have it ready for her. Cold pizza from our election coverage is what it's going to be. Thanks, Ben. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks, guys.